We are joined by Perrin Hastings, the host of the Gender Agenda, a web series looking at all manner of facets of life for queer and LGBTQ people in Aotearoa and, I guess, beyond in the wider world. So we have Perrin joining us from, I assume, the capital of Wellington?
Tamaki Makaurau.
Tamaki, you're also based in Tamaki?
Yes, yes.
True. Oh, I thought, were you ever based in Wellington?
No. So we filmed in various places for the series, Wellington being one of them.
Oh, okay. See, I've only seen interviews from Wellington, so you can imagine my confusion. But anyway, how are you doing this morning, Perrin?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, I'm very happy to have you. It's to have you on the program because you're putting out such a fascinating and necessary video series that we'll touch on in a second. But as well as being the host of the Gender Agenda, you're also an animator at Rumbletoon. How is that going?
Yeah. That's great. So me and my friend and business partner Sandy have been running Rumbletoon for 6 years now.
True.
Yeah. So we've been animating and the Gender Agenda was our first romp into anything live action and documentary, so yeah, no, it's been going really well, thank you.
Awesome, I'm glad to hear. Was there a particular animated work or text that really got you or fired you up into doing animation?
It's too many. Yeah, I mean, I could list off, like, Into the Spider-Verse was one thing that's always inspired me. Mm-hmm. Adventure Time. Oh, I'm one of those. Yeah. Even back in the day, like Samurai Jack, how cinematic it is. Mm-hmm. Just mm-hmm. Yeah, there's heaps. I love cartoons.
I think Samurai Jack is really remarkable just because of how simplistic the animation style is, but how much they can do with it.
Yeah,
and also the voice work in that is awesome.
Especially like Aku and everything.
He's so dope. So dope. Now, for those who don't know, The Gender Agenda is a series exploring navigating queer identity and life. And my phone just dropped. Let me get it real quick. but it's basically exploring life as a queer person in Aotearoa in all different facets. And the second season is dropping today to correspond during Transgender Awareness Week. And I want to know, what does that week mean to you?
Well, right now it means a lot, not just because the show's dropping, but also the world right now is a little crazy for trans people.
Mm.
So it's good to have a week just to reflect. And also for those who may not be, you know, super up to date or super aware of, you know, what trans people are or what we kind of go through on the day to day, the goods and the bads.
Mm.
I think it's just nice to have that week to reflect and learn and also spread some joy.
Mm-hmm. What have you been reflecting on or learning this week?
Mostly ads management for the show.
Fair enough.
But no, I mean, I think I'm in an interesting situation having the show coming out right now because this season has been, you know, 7 months of my life prior, so there are so many things that I've been thinking about for a long time to do with my journey that are only now being seen by the public, and getting to see fresh reactions to that and, you know, hear some stories and what these chats mean to people. I mean, I talked to Marama Davidson at the end of the first episode that went out, and just hearing how important it was for people to hear someone like Marama just say, "We love you for being trans, for being takatāpui."
Mm.
It was very meaningful to me in the moment, and I'm very, very happy that that's coming across to people, and that real just from the heart moment is coming across to people.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful sentiment. Massive ups to Marama. Trans rights worldwide. My goodness. Oh, gosh.
But we should probably be more inclusive.
We should. We definitely should. Since making this new season, you've come out as a trans woman, and I want to know, has operating in this space, in this capacity as the host of the Gender Agenda, sort of helped you figure out maybe what to expect when emerging into being a trans woman?
Yeah. I mean, I think from the very first season, before I knew I was a trans woman, I've just been on a progressive, steady learning journey, speaking to all these wonderful people. And I think I got a little bit of a peek behind the curtain through these interviews in the first season, and I realized all the things that I was agreeing with and all the things that I was saying to people. I was just like, oh, hey, I don't really like being a man. Like, there's
fair enough.
all the things that I would like to change about the way that I express my gender tend to, you know, fall on the, well, I don't want to be so masculine. I don't want to do this or that. And so I got to explore that in real time on camera. And then just after that series dropped, in September of last year, actually, before it dropped, I was like, oh, I am a woman. Like, I was just sitting on the couch thinking about it, and it just clicked, and I was like, what do I do now? So I ended up getting on hormones. I've been on them for about 14 months now, I think. And yeah, ever since then and through the second season, I've been able to explore even more of, you know, now I'm a woman. What does that actually mean for me? What does this, you know, baby trans stage of life mean for me? And that's been really nice and really meaningful. And even little things like my voice getting a little bit higher as I'm getting more comfortable and chatting is really fun. And just looking back on that first season and kind of not completely recognizing myself is also very interesting.
That's really beautiful. That's really beautiful. I have a particular, a very particular question about transitioning, because in your corridor with Dr. Kiara Kremen from Auckland University about how masculinity is forced upon us and how it's kind of destroying everyone, she mentions that there's a certain guilt around embracing femininity. And I want to know, since beginning your transition, have you sort of found that to be the case, that embracing your femininity is like, there's kind of an initial kind of weird reaction there?
Oh, it's not even just initial. I think it's something that trans people in general have to deal with. I think going from male to female is interesting because you're kind of having to detangle all these wires that have been set up across your life. Like, I was raised to be a man, and I, you know, was taught to live as that role, live by the sort of limitations that are placed on men in a certain way. You know, you can't express emotion. You have to be very stern. You have to be the breadwinner. You have to be in control. You know, you just always have to be very uptight, I think, a lot of the time in that kind of typical male role. Whereas femininity, you know, can have a lot of that, I think. But for me, my mum growing up was the one in control of the household. But it feels different, and I think it's this interesting thing where since I've gone on hormones and since I've started to embrace my kind of feminine side, things have felt a lot more calm in my brain. And I think whether you're going from male to female or female to male or anywhere beyond, once you start living that identity that kind of lines up with where you want to be and who you are as an individual, things start to get more calm, things start to get more steady, and it makes sense because you're steadily getting in tune with the song that's already playing in your brain, you know?
You're harmonizing.
Yeah, exactly. You're harmonizing.
Yeah, that's lovely. I have kind of a long-winded question, but I was really struck in with what Dr. Kiara Kremen said about there starting being this guilt associated with femininity, and then I kind of linked that with this quote I heard from the former Greek finance minister and leftist Yanis Varoufakis, who spoke about, you know, how men are socialized as young boys through hating girls. And he says, verbatim, treating them like shit, because femininity and those who, I guess, embody it represent an other in a way. How do you think we de-other femininity or dis-other femininity?
I think some of it just comes down to humanizing femininity. I think a lot of the time people, particularly girls, particularly women, when they're raised, they're already treated as second to men. It's always, how can you serve this male world?
Mm.
And I think just actually listening to women, understanding their issues, and I don't know, maybe scientists could actually pay attention to more women's issues as well. So
yeah.
A lot of things in life aren't just like, oh, yeah, we're set up for this, and women have this weird issue here for some reason. We don't quite understand it. But anyway, that's women being strange. Mm. You know, women be women, women be shopping. you know, it's... I think paying more attention and treating, you know, the feminine side of life as human, because it's also very natural for people, no matter what you're born as, to have this duality. And, you know, there was an interview in the first season with Grayson, who was talking about the Te Ao Māori side of things and how there's this beautiful duality between the sun and the moon, and one is masculine, one is feminine. But as you go through life as a Takatāpui person, it's not about choosing one or the other. It's this beautiful intermingling where from moment to moment you're embracing one or the other depending on what your needs are at that time. And if you look at, you know, small children, I've had nieces and nephews growing up around me when I was growing up. They just do what they want to do in that moment. You know, they're not beholden by these strict kind of roles that we have. And it's only as we grow up that we go, ooh, boys don't do that. Girls don't act like that.
Yeah.
And I think the more we stop doing that and start going, okay, this is how to be a good person,
yeah,
instead of going, this is how a girl is good.
Yeah.
The more freedom we're going to have and the less limitations we're going to place on each other and the less guilt we're going to have for embracing those things which we're not supposed to be, according to those early teachings.
Yeah, totally agree with all that. That's a good salve for really destroying the patriarchy.
I mean, that's what it comes back to, is the patriarchy.
It does, yeah.
Capitalism is a force behind it. I mean, it goes deep, but at the end of the day, it's just about people being able to live as they want to live, as they can happily exist in this world. That's all we're, at a base level, asking for.
It's not much. One of the episodes I heard about, which I thought would be very fascinating, concerns being a young trans person entering the job market. And yes. I want to know, do you touch on editing your LinkedIn? Because I imagine that's a nightmare of a process.
We don't quite go into LinkedIn specifically, but I mean, I've even been in similar situations recently, like updating my dating apps, and sometimes that can be a bit of a garbage fire. Just going, oh, actually my gender's different now, and then the app's going, are you completely sure about that? Because that's going to change your entire feed, and like, it's going to change all the people that can be attracted to you on this app according to our algorithm. So do you really want to see a bunch of straight men right now? And I'm like, well, if I don't have a choice, then yeah.
Gun to my head.
Yeah, it's like, it's fine as long as I'm showing up on this app, whether it be LinkedIn or Tinder or whatever, whatever dating app you use, it's just going to be like, as long as I can show up as me, then that's okay. But to be honest, LinkedIn and the corporate side of things isn't always super friendly to queerness in general. And I've seen that even just over the years posting as a gay man, as I was. Sometimes you get some very interesting threads around why, you know, making rules and having gender-inclusive bathrooms and stuff is, that's just a step too far, according to them.
Mm. So that's quite fascinating. That must be a very, very interesting episode. I must check that out. In the first season, you investigated what it's like for trans people navigating gender-affirming care in Aotearoa, whether that's surgery, hair removal, or hormone treatment. Do you revisit this topic in this new season?
Yes, yeah. So we've got a whole episode dedicated just to gender-affirming surgery.
Mm-hmm.
We actually talked to... I'm very happy and honoured we were able to. We talked to Dr. Rita Yang, who is the gender-affirming surgeon here in New Zealand, does all of the bottom surgery, sure, like all of the genital surgery,
mm-hmm.
and some of the top surgery and everything like that as well. Yeah, anybody that's going through the public system to try to access these things, which there is a very long wait to do so, but anybody that goes through and successfully gets through ends up going to Dr. Rita Yang. So it was amazing to be able to talk with her and, you know, be able to explore the reality, I think, of the surgical system here,
mm-hmm.
and even just the reality of the people having to go overseas if people choose, you know, to go to Thailand or something that fits more into the timeline they have and they've got the money for it.
Mm.
Just, excuse me, getting into the real side of what it means to get gender-affirming surgery and if it's even accessible for most of us trans people here in New Zealand, because it is either really expensive to go overseas or a very, very long wait to get it here.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout, you know, the making of that episode, I talked to a lot of people who straight up just gave up. And that's a hard place to be in, because when we're talking about these surgeries, they're not just a simple cosmetic surgery. It's not just, you know, getting a nose drop. It's actually shifting your body, molding your body into something that doesn't give you dread every single day.
It's such
something
a,
where you can look in the mirror.
I can't imagine. Yeah. I can't imagine what it's like being in this situation. And I've heard that some, I mean, you've investigated this in your previous season about, in your previous episode about navigating the gender affirming care healthcare system. Yeah. And some trans folks, I guess, in desperation, because they think they're going to be turned away for whatever reason, they lie when it comes to mental health surveys and kind of diagnosis to get the care they need. And I completely understand that because the medical system does suck. On the other hand, it seems like there's this, you know, the kind of resistance about lying not being very great too, because you might not get the full picture. How do we square this problem?
At the end of the day, it comes down to staff being able to understand the intricacies of the situation. It comes down to medical practitioners, no matter where you are in the country, being able to hear someone go, I would like hormones, and not immediately cancel that process just because they have depression, they have anxiety. Because a lot of the time, that need and those, you know, mental struggles are connected.
Mm-hmm.
For me,
mm-hmm.
I have lived for a very long time with chronic depression, with anxiety. I've been medicated for years, you know, on quite a high dose. And it wasn't until very recently, after being on hormones for so long, that I've actually been able to cut that dose for the first time.
Kappa.
And I'm looking at actually getting off of my depression meds, which is insane.
Mm-hmm.
But understanding that those things are often connected, and that's why people tend to lie, because they know often more than some of the regional doctors. And we're talking people who just haven't had access to the knowledge, haven't had access to the education to understand trans healthcare specifically.
Mm.
There are plenty of doctors out there in New Zealand who are working to increase access to that knowledge, And there are a lot of very passionate doctors around who, even if they don't understand themselves, are actively seeking this out. That is helping a lot. But when we're talking about kind of more regional care, you know, it's quite a lottery depending on where you were born in New Zealand as to whether you're going to have simple, easy, not having to lie access to these hormones, or if you're going to have to play the system a little bit to get what you actually need. Which sounds terrible, but until you actually hear the stories of the people having to do this, you realize, once again, it's a life-saving measure. This isn't people who are just like, oh, I might try hormones just for the fun of it. These are the people who, you know,
they need it, or they're gonna something bad's gonna happen, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah. And it goes the same with puberty blockers, which has turned into its own whole thing, with, you know, guidelines and practices being blocked at the moment by politicians instead of medical practitioners. But yeah, these things are needed, and quite often they're not permanent either. They're not as dreadful as I think they're often painted out to be. And it's only getting that education that's going to help people actually get what they need.
Thank you so much for coming on the program today, Pierre, and I really, really, really appreciate your time. Do you have any final words for our lovely listeners?
If you tune into the show and you resonate with anything, then I'm happy. You know, as long as, no matter who you are, as long as you see the show and feel even the slightest little bit of warmth and comfort in this world right now, that's my job done. So I hope you all have lovely days, and yeah, just get out there and be yourself.
Well, kia ora. Thank you very much, Pierre, and I really appreciate it. All right, folks, that was Pierre Hastings, the host of The Gender Agenda. You can find that on YouTube by looking up The Gender Agenda, or if you go to Instagram, look up The_gender_agenda. Joining me.
That was a Radio 191 event podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.